is Hyperspace Theology, exploring what we can know about life and faith and God Almighty through a galaxy far, far away.
Welcome to Hyperspace Theology, a show in which we're exploring theology through the lens of a galaxy far, far away. From belief to redemption, orthodoxy to resurrection, the Star Wars galaxy is jam-packed with theological themes, and we're going to crack them wide open, or at least a little bit, hopefully. Hopefully, of course, this can be of help to you in your journey of faith, or at the very least, it can enhance your appreciation for the galaxy we all know and love, and woo, is there a lot to know and love with this particular topic for tonight. We are, of course, going to be talking about the new Disney Plus show, Obi-Wan Kenobi. Part of me is tempted to say it like he says in, what is that, episode 4? Obi-Wan
Kenobi. Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
I think they should either gone with Obi-Wan or Kenobi. I think Obi-Wan Kenobi was still too long.
The worst possible title. I mean, out of all the titles you could have come up with this, terrible title, great show, don't you think?
We are not going to dunk on the show before we even get to what we're talking about.
That's a good point. You know what I would have liked as a topic? Hello there, : a Star Wars story. So maybe that's a little bit too on the nose. Well, yeah. Regardless, hello there to all of our listeners. And I am Jared Mays, joining me once again this week, recently having finished harvesting and smoking the meat of a crate dragon because he lives in Texas. That's what they do with all their exotic meats. Dr. Kevin Burr.
Mesquite goes really well with the crate dragon.
I'm literally drooling thinking about it. Also with us again, fresh off of making a deal with a Jawa, Scott Howland.
Yutini!
There it is. That's my other show. Well, I'm really happy to be back.
I was trying to tie it all together.
You did. It was perfect. Yeah, just get an octave or two higher. Actually, I was watching the episode that had the Jawa. My kids, I think, were with me, or maybe I decided I would show them that one. Is that episode 1, 2? Early on. And when the Jawa says Utini, you know, at the top of his lungs, my kids both looked up at me and they said, "Daddy, that's the thing you like." Nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. So let's talk about the show. Let's talk about it. We haven't had a chance between the three of us, other than a meme or three, and to really say much of what we thought about it, mostly because I'm going to let you in behind the curtain on what it's like to be a podcaster, everybody. Rather than exchange what you want to say via text, somebody starts the conversation and then inevitably somebody else says, "Let's save it for the show." So we're going to do it. Finally, here we are talking about Obi-Wan Kenobi. Scott, what did you think? What was this like for you? Where did you watch this? Set the scene for us.
Well, my wife and I would watch it every Wednesday. If it was the day I had to work, it would be right after I got home from work, which would be late in the evening, like 8 or 9 o'clock at night. But we would miss it every Wednesday. I really liked it. Do it a little uneven maybe, but I really enjoyed the journey that old Ben went on.
Well, he's not that old. What is it? It's the sun that's weathered his face a little artificially, right?
That's why you got to wear your SPF.
Perfect. I spent the last week volunteering at camp with teenage boys, 44 of them. And a couple of years ago, they started calling me sir, which really just makes my hairs grow in gray. Every time they say it, I can feel another one sprout. Well, my experience watching it was very different. I am, however, interested, because I've got a lot to say about this. I'm interested, a little disappointed, Scott, I'm going to be honest, a little disappointed that you weren't like a 5:30 a.m. type of guy. We're going to wake up early for it.
I thought about it sometimes, and if it was a day I didn't have to work, we watched it at maybe like 7 or 8 in the morning.
Okay. But you redeemed yourself like partway.
I work a long shift. I work a 12-hour shift, so if it was a day I had to work, I would do that. I would have to wait till I got home.
Yeah, well, they block.
I can't watch Disney Plus at work. They block that. So,
I'll teach you the workaround. I don't guess I should say that on our show about...
Man, they treat it like it's spice or something.
Trying to encourage people to be good Christians and Here I am teaching you workarounds. All right. Well, Kevin, what about you? What was it like to watch Obi-Wan Kenobi? What's the anticipation? How are you feeling in advance of this thing? Now that it's all over, how do you feel?
Yeah. Well, when we did the first episode, I was like, yeah, Obi-Wan Kenobi's my favorite character. Absolutely love his arc all the way through movies, Clone Wars, all that. And so, yeah, definitely anticipation was high. Some of the YouTubers I follow are like, oh, it's going to be a disaster. Like, okay, guys, yeah, like, just calm down.
YouTube
like
we, for you.
You've seen a trailer. You've seen a trailer or two. And yeah, anyway, overall impression, I thoroughly enjoyed parts of it. Other parts were kind of meh. There were a few parts where I thought, man, that is dumb, or that doesn't make any sense, or why is she doing parkour, or you know, stuff like that. But overall, I enjoyed it, and it made some sense to me why Obi-Wan was on that journey. Disney Star Wars does seem to have a habit of taking guys whom you think will be hopeful and endure.
Yeah.
And turning them into kind of sad, depressed, PTSD inflicted shells of their former selves. But at least Obi-Wan got a redemption.
Yeah.
He got a redemption in this, much more so than Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi.
I think Luke has a redemption too, though I don't think it's as earned. It needed more time. I think it should have been stretched out to another movie, possibly.
That's the story of Star Wars, in my opinion. I think they rushed it to redemption.
Yeah.
They always seem to truncate that part of the story.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see in a lot of the aspects of it, I'd like to see them stretch that out a little bit more, see it a little more earned.
Yeah. We're not here to criticize or critique. We are, however, here to talk about some of how this show made us think and feel, particularly on our Christian walks. I do have to say, however, I got to gush for a second. I got the tremendous once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to be at the world premiere of this thing. I had the chance to go with Utini to Star Wars Celebration out in Anaheim, California, the last weekend in May there. And I went in with zero expectations. And I was excited for the show, definitely. But I was more concerned with the logistics. I'm a very task-oriented kind of person. I'm the one that writes the show notes and schedules the meetings. Okay. Like that's what I do and love it. However, sometimes I don't take enough time to just sink into the emotions of it all. Showed up at the very first panel of Star Wars Celebration, got lucky enough to, or maybe it was the Force, to get into that one, the Lucasfilm Studios showcase. With zero expectations, I was just focused on getting through the line and getting my ticket scanned and finding where my friends were seated, getting with them for the content of it all. We could record like a good reaction shot YouTube video. And then they started off with Duel of the Fates performed by 100-person choir. The lights were low. There was a smoke machine. They were wearing these robes and then they just go, Kora, Radama! And I'm just unbelievably excited. I noticed two little figures moving up on the stage. The lights come on and we discover this Ewan McGregor and Hayden Christensen. They were in the room with us. And so Kathleen Kennedy came out, the rest of the cast came out. They talked for 10 minutes about the show, kind of just some general, building hype. The actress who played Reva, Moses Ingram, she made an impression on me. They got to her, they asked her this difficult, thought-provoking question. She totally ignored it. She was like too excited by this 2,000 person crowd. And she said, honestly, I just got to say, I don't know what I did to finesse this. she was excited to like have people there cheering her on. And they announced then we were going to get to come back later that night for the world premiere at 7 p.m. with the cast and crew. It was a red carpet event. They handed us popcorn and Pepsis on our way in. And we got to be in the room, standing ovation for the entire crowd or for the entire cast when it was over. It was an unbelievable experience. And so my impression, especially those first two episodes, is very biased by this unbelievable experience I had with, eight of my friends from Utini getting to be there in the room and reacting to it. There's nothing like being at a Star Wars thing with a friend. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Scott, I think we got to see one or two of the sequels together, didn't we?
I knew we did the Rise of Skywalker. I think I had to work the day you guys were doing The Last Jedi.
Okay, we had a big group from church. We had a costume contest. I remember some of the kids had Sith Lord robes, which was cool. That was definitely a fond memory there. So a little bit biased, a little bit skewed, but it was a very fun experience. I'm glad to get to share in the memory. Honestly, even just recounting the story, I can't stop smiling. Did you guys have like a favorite moment across the whole series before we get into the theology of it all? Like one thing for you that like that was the thing.
I'd say for me it was that final fight between Obi-Wan and Vader. And it hit me. Like, I wasn't expecting
full spoilers,
it.
By the way, if you are listening to this, full spoilers, you've been warned.
Yeah. Because it hit me in a way that I wasn't expecting emotionally. It builds up to the moment and you're like, all right, yeah, like Obi-Wan's my favorite character. So like I want him to do well. And then as they are getting after each other, and as Obi-Wan gets the upper hand, with every blow of the lightsaber, with every rock that comes flying in, I started to tear up because we've probably had those experiences before where, you know, a friend or a relationship is broken and it hurts. And then to see it in such a dramatic fashion on the screen like that, it's like, oh my goodness, this is so painful, not because it was bad, but poorly produced, but because it just hit me, like all the emotion of it hit me, and I wasn't expecting that. And so that's, you know, and every time I think about that, it's like, man, that just, ooh, that's rough.
Definitely a good choice. I love the cinematography of it all, with the helmet being broken open and the red glow of Vader's saber, and then the blue glow of Obi-Wan's saber, and the eye. I haven't gone back and rewatched this. One of my friends said that when Anakin Vader would say something hateful, his eye would glow yellow, like in Revenge of the Sith. But when he would say something a little bit more human, his eye would turn back to a normal shade of human eye color. I don't know where I'm going with this, but I've got to go back and rewatch it for that reason. Definitely a strong creative choice, emotional scene. I watched that one at a buddy's home theater, and his big black lab, chocolate lab, came in during that scene. I'm really into it, crying. And that lab sneaks up on me and starts licking my ear, scared me half to death. So I had to rewatch it for sure without that distraction. What about you, Scott?
I have to co-sign on what Kevin said about that scene, but if I had to pick a different scene, one that kind of hit me kind of on a feels emotional level was the first time he sees Vader and the first time that they fight. And you can see just how much and how far Obi-Wan had fallen from the Force and how much he, you know, how far he was away from the man he used to be. And just the mission that Vader was on at that point, just him just tearing through stuff, and just how feared he was for everybody, how he had earned the cloud, the aura he has, sure, of being the baddest man in the galaxy, you know, like that whole part, and seeing how far Obi-Wan had fallen in that fight. And how he really got his behind kicked there.
Right.
And, you know, it was a very different time than the last time that they met. And it was just one of those moments that just kind of got to me about, well, wow, how much did he has really lost his way here. And he really needs to get on a horse and figure it out, you know, out what, you know, what's going on, what he needs to do. So that's kind of a part that really got to me.
I think the message I sent to my friends right after watching that episode was, he dragged him through the friggin' fire.
Yeah.
Like, it's so violent, so brutal. But, you know, you can see, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more in a minute, Vader so blinded by his rage, his revenge, that it became all consuming. And he lost sight of why he was even doing it in the first place, and did not succeed at even, you know, at killing Obi-Wan, which was, I guess, the initial goal, but became so blinded by that that he failed in that particular instance. I think for me, the favorite moment was in episode one when they reveal Alderaan and Leia and Bail Organa. I'm sitting next to my friend Eric, who he and I both share this, you know, almost irrational love of Bail Organa as, first of all, Leia's adoptive father. Second of all, as somebody who in the prequels is a buddy with Obi-Wan and Yoda. I mean, he's clearly a friend and risks everything to save them. Somebody who then is working from the inside to bring down the Emperor, working with the system, secretly forming the rebellion while also serving as an Imperial senator. We just love the guy. And then we find out, we look at each other, they show Alderaan, and I just, at the top of my lungs, said, oh, we about to do it. I was so excited, thinking that he was going to be on screen. And at first, it's a pump fake. It's not Leia. It's like this decoy. And then Bria Organa walks in, and no disrespect to Bria, but I love Bail a whole lot more just on a personal level. And then finally, the scene of him parenting her and making her feel valued and explaining their family values and her place in it all, thinking about where she's come from. And she says, I'm not even a real Organa. And we know the story. Yeah. I was weeping. Not just crying a little bit, but sobbing with everything. And being a daughter of little girls, too. I'm sure that's part of it. And then, of course, she totally, in the classic Disney style, disrespects and disregards everything he said and runs away and gets into trouble. Good parenting in Star Wars. Nope, didn't work.
I have to say, if there's one favorite moment, like just one little moment, it's when Leia dresses down her cousin at that dinner. I love that scene where he's like, you're not even a real Organa, and then she just completely politely kindly eviscerates him. Yeah. And it is just that is absolutely a highlight for me from the series.
I felt
you can see the spark of Leia right in that moment. The Leia that fearlessly goes after Vader, you know, stands up to him in A New Hope, going, you know, I knew you'd be here. You know, when she sees Moff Tarkin, it's like, she's standing right up to these titans.
Yeah, I could feel your bowel stench when you came on board.
Yes.
What a one-liner. Yes. Right.
And you can see that in that spark of that in that scene with her and her cousin. I just love that. I just thought that was awesome.
For sure. Well, there's a lot to love. I've got my little critiques too, but yeah there's a lot to love for sure. Kevin, lead us off. Let's talk about how this made us think from a theological perspective. There's a handful of themes in particular that are worthy of discussion for tonight's show, and I'm sure we'll come up with more in the weeks to come. But I think the day the first episode came out, you said, I want to do an episode about this. What is it?
Yeah, the theme of perseverance. There's a couple of verses out of the later New Testament book known as the Book of James, where this guy James has written to Christians who are kind of scattered throughout the Roman world, and is giving them some really good practical advice on here's what growing in your faith, here's what Christian maturity really looks like. And he starts off the letter by greeting everybody. And then he says, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of any kind, consider it nothing but joy, because you know that the testing of your faith produces endurance. And let endurance have its full effect, so that you may be mature and complete, lacking in nothing. That's kind of the overarching theme of the book of James, because the rest of it runs through, just various aspects of Christian maturity all the way down through there. And there's a very clear sense of struggling with perseverance and maintaining one's drive with Obi-Wan here. He is, he's dutifully watching Luke, but his relationship with the Force seems to be strained. It's been 10 years. And after Yoda dropped this little nugget that Qui-Gon Jinn would, you know, might reach out to him in the Force. And I understand that when Obi-Wan is meditating, it's not necessarily the same thing as praying. Although there is an interesting line in Rogue One, right? Where, and forgive me for not remembering the specific characters' names, but the gentleman says, I'm one with the Force and the Force is with me. Another character sees him doing that and says, is he praying? And so I guess there's some concept of prayer in the Star Wars galaxy.
That'd be a fun episode sometime.
It could, yeah. And prayer, so like when I see Obi-Wan, when I see Obi-Wan there trying to reach out to Qui-Gon through the Force, I look at that as at least comparable to prayer. And the fact that even though Obi-Wan is struggling with the Force, he can barely hold up Leia, whereas if you watch him in Revenge of the Sith or the Clone Wars, he's significantly more powerful in the Force. He is still striving. He's still trying to do what he knows he needs to do, which is to learn from Qui-Gon. So his perseverance to continue learning, his perseverance even with the mission of watching Luke, although he had fallen quite a bit, like Scott mentioned earlier, his level of determination and stick-to-itness, that's a good Southern saying, I think it's Southern at least, is pretty inspirational.
Yeah, he certainly finds himself stuck and depressed more than he finds himself intentionally on mission.
Yeah. He's existing.
Sure.
Yeah.
He's existing. He he gets up, he goes to work, he does his thing, he comes home, he checks in on Luke, and then he tries to reach out. And to me, it seemed like he was halfway in between trying to connect to the Force and trying to isolate himself from the Force, kind of like what Luke did. Mm-hmm. It seemed like he was trying to do both things at once, denying his Jedi, bearing his lightsabers and saying, and he told that other Jedi, I don't remember his name at this point, but, he told the other Jedi, just, you have to forget who you were if you want to live, if you want to survive. And that seemed to be the mode that Obi-Wan was in at the beginning, is survival. Just, okay, I'm getting food to eat. I have a little cave that I live in, and I have a mission that I do, and I look over the boy, and it's not really welcomed by his guardians. And, so that seems to be a big takeaway at the very beginning of the story I get from him there is he's, for lack of a better term, he's lost his way, but he's, he thinks he just killed his best friend. Mm. He's been living with that for 10 years and also hiding, making sure that he doesn't get found out. So that's kind of a lot of the things I took away right at the very beginning, the beginning of his journey in this story. So.
Yeah. It really makes our episode about, exile, about being cut off from the Force that we did a number of episodes ago, a lot more relevant. Then I think we had one example of Luke on Octu and then a character from the expanded universe, and that was about it. And so now we've got another very relevant example of somebody who had this put distance between themselves and the Force. And now we find, of course, Obi-Wan having to reconnect with the Force. And what he has to do is get over his own ego, his own guilt of feeling responsible for everything that went wrong in the entire galaxy in order to do so. Yeah. Go ahead, Scott.
And the hubris, it was all his fault.
Right.
Like it wasn't his
really
fault.
Felt like. That's right. It was Anakin's own decisions. Palpatine's own decisions. There were a lot of factors that, and he took a stand where he could, not to say that he wasn't infallible. But he had a second chance, right? He's got another person, couple of little ones to invest in, and that to me has always been a really beautiful idea, that at the end of Revenge of the Sith, the not so much the duel on Mustafar or the Yoda Palpatine duel, but the fact that it ends with Obi-Wan taking young Luke to, sounds like a rapper, young Luke, the newborn Luke Skywalker, the new hope of the galaxy, taking him to Onan Baru on Tatooine. The suns are rising, maybe they're setting, I don't remember, on Tatooine. And the fact that the story isn't over, we know what's going to happen next. There's still a hope. But somewhere along the line, he lost sight of that. You know, he had lost sight of mission. He had lost sight of the idea that he still had a task to focus on. And I think that this can really get into one of the real troubles with maybe the modern state of Christianity, the modern state of I don't want to say the church at large. That seems like too much of a blanket statement. But some Christians that I know, at least on a personal level, where we can be so focused on what's wrong that it can be a whole lot easier to despair on a day-to-day basis than to maintain the spiritual disciplines that are required, the hope that's necessary, and also the emphasis on using your spiritual gifts, on reaching the lost, a number of things, Christian service, that can give us purpose on a day-to-day basis. Otherwise, it's really easy to despair if we just look at what's wrong with the world and say, well, I don't know what I can do about it, right?
Yeah, I think so. That's it's easy to lose sight of what you can do when you're overwhelmed with all the things that you can't do. Rey hears Obi-Wan say these are the first steps.
Yeah.
In Maz's place. And what I think Rey was taking from was, you know, something what I think she was taking from that was some kind of a recognition of, you know, there are big problems out there, but you know, there are small things that you can do that, you know, continue to compound with each other. A related point that I wanted to mention too is this idea of perseverance. There are times when Christians find themselves drifting from their community, deconstructing their faith. And there are times when that deconstruction is absolutely necessary, because you know, let's assume that you might not have been taught perfectly or might not understand perfectly. And so there's some level of deconstruction that needs to take place. When those questions arise, when those doubts come, that doesn't mean bail at the first sign of trouble.
Right.
My 5-year-old turned 6 today. So at the time of recording, it's his birthday today, and he got a new bike, and we let him ride it. And we had bought him a bike a couple of years ago, and he just gave up. If he couldn't make it up the driveway, gave up. Easiest thing. Tonight, there were a couple of times when he wanted to give up and said, "Hey, buddy, you're doing it right. Just try harder. Just try a little bit harder. Stick with it." And then next thing you know, like he's riding his bike, you know, all the way, you know, a quarter mile from our park to our house, and had a little bit of help crossing the street. And that was it.
Oh, that's cool. By tonight was the night he learned?
Tonight awesome. Was the night. Yeah, he's got training wheels and everything, but, you know, he's still just figuring it out.
Yeah.
And for the Christian who faces some phase of deconstruction or doubt, it's okay to do that. It's even better to do that in a community of people who genuinely care about you.
Yeah. Well said. I can't help but shake. I can't quite shake. There we go. Romans 5. Let's see here. 3-5. And this is something that when I was teaching Romans back in Massachusetts that we spent a lot of time on, I was really grateful for one of our shepherds for his emphasis on this verse. And I remember teaching one night and he was like, let's go back to it next week. I was like, awesome, cool. It's a great verse. I'd never really taken my time through it. Romans 5:3-5. Not only that, we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. I kind of think of this as, and correct me if you think I'm wrong here, it's analogous to like the Jedi or Sith code, right? One thing leads to another, and this is what the entirety of our existence is all about, right? You know, the Jedi code is, let's see here. I used to have these memorized. There is no emotion, there is peace, which I think is automatically, as much as I love the Jedi and they're the good guys, right out the gate, we're on the wrong foot, in my opinion. Yeah. There is no emotion, there is peace. There is no ignorance, there is knowledge. I'm on board with that too. That's better, but still not perfect. There is no passion, there is serenity, there is no chaos, there is harmony, there is no death, there is the Force. That is helpful and beautiful in its own right, but not compatible with Christian theology. The Sith code is a lot worse. Peace is a lie, there is only passion. Through passion, I gain strength. Through strength, I gain power. Through power, I gain victory. Through victory, my chains are broken. Okay. Think about this one. Romans 5:3-5. We rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that suffering produces endurance. Endurance produces character. Character produces hope. And I'm just thinking about these story beats with Obi-Wan. He suffered and he focused on those sufferings, not realizing that those sufferings can do something good for him, right? They can produce endurance, which produces character, which, and this is the whole story, isn't it? It produces hope. Mm-hmm. He is there on Tatooine investing in the new hope of the galaxy. But from a Christian perspective, right? God's love has been, hope does not put us to shame, because God's love has been poured into our hearts through the Holy Spirit who has been given to us. What do you guys think? Am I on the right track with this, or is it a little bit too conceptual?
I mean, I don't think it's necessarily... I think that some of these things for the Jedi and the Sith are written in a similar tone, you know, to hit these kind of beats as well. One thing leads to another, leads to another, leads to another.
Right. Poetic symmetry.
So, yeah, I think so. I don't think that's accidental.
Sure.
In the Star Wars side of things. And I always just come back to Obi-Wan at the beginning of this story thinks he's at the end of his. He thinks it's the Forces, everything's done, no more Jedi. I just have to see this out and that's it, I'm done. Instead of seeing the big picture of what needs to happen next.
Sure.
It's not just to protect. So that's kind of, you know, I think he doesn't see the steps he has to go through at this point. He only sees, I'm on my last step. I'm just here to make sure this boy can make it to a certain point.
And it's the end of the road. And
yeah.
And even those efforts are being thwarted by Owen. Owen, yeah. Who says, listen, the Jedi, y'all are just bringing problems. I've only been gone from Massachusetts for 5 months, Scott, and I'm already saying y'all every other sentence.
Surprised it took you that long.
I don't even notice it except when I'm talking to somebody from up north. And so his efforts were thwarted. So it's got to feel hopeless. It's got to feel hopeless.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, he's got a purpose. He's got a job to do that. It has the entire fate of the galaxy hanging in the hinges. And what he doesn't see, of course, is the other side of that coin, that there is another, right? You've got the Leia out there who still needs some help. That's like a 5 out of 10 impression. Kevin's Yoda is better, let's be honest. There we go.
Yeah. Boy, you're grading on a curve there if you give yourself 5.
Hey, thank you for that. I appreciate it. Where's that eject button,
Kevin? I hate you.
This definitely, you are my brother, Scott. We have Obi-Wan on a mission. He's got a job to do. And even if every day that is not the most exciting thing, it's important that he keeps that bigger picture in mind. This is, I think, one of the most central things to day-to-day Christian living that can easily be lost. The idea that we're not just here to run out the clock. We are not just trying to make it through another work week, or everybody's working for the weekend. We've got more of a purpose than just trying to make it to Friday afternoon. You know what I'm saying? I think about the episode of The Office where somebody gives Stanley a job to do, and he looks at them and he says, "What you don't understand is this is a run out the clock situation. It's 2 o'clock on Friday. We're just trying to make it to the end of the work week. And we will do our jobs as slowly as possible until this week is over." And I think about how many Christians go through life like that. We're just trying to make it to the next paycheck. We're just trying to make it to the next football game.
Hey, man, I've been saved. I've been baptized.
Yeah.
That's it.
Right.
Instead of progressing, instead of keeping learning.
And serving, yeah, and plugging in. And not everybody has to serve in the same way. Yeah. But I think one of the biggest keys to church's success is being focused on more than just inner church politics and trying not to upset one another or being worried about, we had a conflict recently that was funny. I won't get into it because it's at my current church, right? So I can say whatever I want about the church in Massachusetts now that I'm gone. Not where I'm at. Yeah, it's easy to focus on the little things within the body, but got to realize that God's called us to something more, too. Do you want to add to that, Kevin?
The mission idea is pretty good. It's interesting, too, that the farther west you go in the United States, you find old churches called missions, and they're out in isolated places, and they viewed their work with some degree of earnestness. Mm. There was almost a sense of urgency that, like, I need to put this church out here in the midst where it's difficult to get to, but in the midst of a hostile, potentially hostile crowd, because the work is important.
Kind of like a lighthouse or an outpost.
Yeah. Yeah. And so for Obi-Wan to see himself like that, or maybe it's important for us to see Obi-Wan like that. I think the analogy is pretty appropriate that, you know, what we are doing is very similar in a lot of ways.
That's why I'm interested to see where they'll go with the show next, if there is a season two. One of my favorite Expanded Universe books, which I would really encourage everybody to check out if they liked Obi-Wan Kenobi, or even if they didn't, because you could get a totally different version of the story set in between episodes 3 and 4, directly after episode 3. So way earlier in the timeline than this show. It's just simply called Kenobi by the author is John Jackson Miller. I had the chance to interview him about the book recently on our podcast Legends Look Back, and he talked about, you know, the idea of Obi-Wan still finding a way to help people without attracting imperial attention because he's a Jedi. So the question is, even if the Jedi are extinct, is he still a Jedi? And he finds himself plugging in with the moisture farmers who are besieged by sand people raids, and then he starts helping them, and then that gets a little bit messy, and there's this whole complicated dilemma on how much should he help, how much should he defend the weak and the helpless. He's still a Jedi, so his day-to-day mission of helping the weak is in conflict with his 20-year mission, which is training Luke, right, and protecting him. So that's a good read on that topic.
He has
as well.
A whole discussion on Tatooine with that other Jedi,
right,
about that other Jedi fills that role of Obi-Wan there, saying he's still trying to help people, he's still trying to cling to the Jedi ideals, where Obi-Wan at this point has given up those ideals. He's given up the have to help the weak and downtrodden, the innocents, you know. He's there to protect, and that's kind of what I, he feel, the read I get is that's where you know, that's how he's lost his way, is he's no longer considering himself a Jedi. And it pains me that I don't remember this Jedi's name, but, you know, and he ends up, you know, dying in that first or second episode, and where Obi-Wan may have been able to help him get off of the planet or stand up to the Inquisitors, you know, and he didn't. So I think that that's interesting that you taught. I've never read that book, so I think it's interesting that this other Jedi in here fills that role in this story.
It's a powerful moment in the show where Obi-Wan sets him straight and he says, listen, this is not going to go the way you think. You need to bury your lightsaber in the sand and get out of here. I am not going to help you. I'm not the man I once was. And that, to me, as a reader who was kind of hoping to see some nods to the book, I'm watching that scene and I say, okay, I get it. This is going to be different. I need to change my expectations. Obi-Wan is on a different journey and he's got a long way to go. And he does, you know, he starts off having lost his faith in the Jedi Order or possibly in himself. But by the end, has come to a healthier view of how he can help and what he has to offer. Scott, you said that for you personally, this is one of the strongest themes that you wanted to speak to, the theme of someone having lost and then having a renewed faith.
Yeah, I think, you know, in my head, you know, it's one of those things where I look at it one way and I see, how can you not take this away, that he's obviously somebody who's entirely lost his faith. And then I found it's, you know, when he is sitting there trying to reach out to Qui-Gon, he's sitting there like, you know, you can see him, you know, praying or meditating or whatever he's trying to do to reach out to Qui-Gon. I'm like, and I'm sitting there and I'm yelling at the TV, it's not going to work because you don't believe right now. You don't believe in yourself. You don't believe in the Force. You don't believe in anything bigger at this point, you know? Mm-hmm. So you're not going to be able to talk to Qui-Gon. He's not going to be there for you because you're not there for the Force. And you're not there as a Jedi. And the mission that he had to go on to help save Leia, that stirred something in him that he had forgotten about. You know, 10 years on a desert planet, just cutting up whatever that beast was. You know, routine seems to have just beat out of him, and hiding from these Inquisitors when they show up, it just kind of beat out of him his ability to stand up to what he normally would have. You know, if it was somebody who was back in the Clone Wars era, Obi-Wan would be the first person to stand up to those Inquisitors, you know.
Sure.
Right. Especially when they cut off that an innocent person's hand in that thing and you know, threaten Owen.
Right.
So, you know, someone he knows, he would have stood up for that. And you can just see that how a lot of this, you know, knowing what he had done to Anakin, you know, not knowing Anakin was alive yet, but knowing, you know, thinking he had killed his brother, thinking he had, you know, someone who was, he had trained since he was a child. And he feels like he betrayed him, and he feels all this stuff weighing on him. And instead of letting go of that and trying to just get in touch with the Force again, he's taken that baggage on and not looked at what his, for lack of a better term, what his faith should dictate to him to do.
Yeah. Beautifully said. Definitely. Yeah. It is powerful to consider Obi-Wan at lightsaber point and Obi-Wan doing nothing.
Yeah. And this is the guy who's protecting the child he's supposed to be protecting. So it's not even like a random guy person that he can justify in his thing. It's not my business. He knows this man, you know, he has entrusted this, the children of his friends, one of the children of his friends, to this man. So just not to stand up for that is, I think, powerful on how far he has fallen and how much he has lost his way. And I think that's extremely evident when you get to the end and he finally sees Qui-Gon. And Qui-Gon's like, I've been waiting for you the whole time. You know, like, Like, you had your stuff you needed to figure out. You needed to find your way back to me. And it wasn't just enough to ask to talk to me. You had to believe it. You know, that's kind of all the inference I got from that.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I think about how important it is to pray with faith. James says a lot about you ask and you don't receive. And he says, well, you're not praying for the right things. He also talks about the importance of a prayer of faith and how effective a prayer of faith can be. And I've often wondered, do I have faith in my prayers? And it depends on what I'm asking for. We can convince ourselves in a modern scientific era that, well, you know, I know how these things typically go. So I'm going to be cautiously optimistic in my prayers, or I'm going to be very measured in the way I ask God. I don't find Jesus praying with hesitancy, particularly for the sick. He prays boldly. Obviously, Jesus is a special case in his ability to heal. But Jesus, I think we can take Jesus' words in the garden. Not my will, but thine, right? Jesus praying, if it's your will, let this cup pass from me. And then misapply those to the entirety of our prayer life. We preface everything with timidity. And that's not what Jesus is doing there. Jesus is wrestling with the toughest decision in all of world history. Anyway, I'm getting off topic, getting off track. It is amazing to see how faithless Obi-Wan is. And having to rediscover that. And he sees it in the eyes of a child, right? A child who believes in him and challenges him. And I'm going to get weepy having little girls. Kids can do that. They can inspire you to look at your own life under a microscope, reflect the world back at you. Yeah, I loved the example earlier, Kevin, of teaching your kid to ride the bike. Yeah, you're in the trenches with all this too, for sure. What else about the idea of Obi-Wan having to have a renewed faith? There's obviously a parallel to Reva in her journey of having gone from Jedi Padawan, a Jedi initiate, a youngling who then becomes an Inquisitor, is looking to get revenge on Vader, but doesn't have a ton of hopeful, positive purpose other than a desire for revenge. And Obi-Wan finds his purpose in helping her find hers, which I thought was a good parallel. I didn't love her character, but did love the parallel of that arc. I think it's a good point, Scott, that sometimes those things are rushed, especially with a 6-episode series.
Part of the thing I liked about her was the in her drive to get her revenge, she's become what she hates. She's become what she's mm-hmm. trying to kill. And I think that's a good lesson for people to try and take away from this is when you get single focused, single-minded like that on one mission, you can completely lose who you are. And that could have been fleshed out a lot better. That's true. But I think that if you can look at the 30,000-foot view of her arc, that's what she has become. You know, she wanted to, her mission was to kill Vader. And in inference, she's killing other people to get to Vader. Yeah, so she's becoming what she doesn't want to be, which she's fighting, which I think is a powerful message.
Yeah. I mean, Christians, we can become so consumed with injustice or with what's wrong with the world. Perhaps it's our people who don't see the world the way that we do. We can be so consumed with sin and the sinful state of our culture or the tragedy of war and violence. And we can become so angry and upset that we lose sight of Jesus for our own, sometimes even, you know, divine rage or injustice, a sense of this is wrong. Bill Hybels calls it holy discontent. I like a book I read about this idea of there's something wrong and I've got to do something about it, but that can get out of hand. For Moses, the example he gives in that book is he murdered an Egyptian. But God needed to harness his passion for his people to say, let's use that in the right way, right? If you become consumed by hate, it'll consume you, right? Kevin, you've been quiet for a while. We're talking about the idea of revenge here, how it can consume a person.
Yeah, I've been chewing on what Scott said here. Made me think about how deeply religious, and I use religious in air quotes here, how deeply religious the show Obi-Wan Kenobi was. When you think about it like this, putting your faith in something that is bigger than yourself, be it the Jedi Order, the Force, or you know, maybe someone, and you were the chosen one, severing balance of Force, not leave it in darkness, I think. And so Obi-Wan has lost faith in what is good, it appears, while still doing what he knows to be the right thing. He doesn't give up on Luke at all. But his connection with the Force, or his relation with the Force, or Jedi Order, or that's definitely suffering. Reva has done the opposite. Also, egregious thing. She has put her faith in the wrong thing. So losing faith in what is good versus putting faith in what is bad or evil, both of which can have pretty disastrous consequences. Reva's is, it's, I mean, Scott absolutely nailed it. And that's that was the point that I saw the most in the show, where it's like, you know, when it really becomes clear that, okay, she was the youngling that we saw in the temple the night of Order 66. She became what she hated. Scott is absolutely right there. And that is one of the great tragedies of our increasingly quasi and post-Christian society today. So I've dropped a lot at us. Let me explain it really quickly.
Yeah.
I think our culture's emphasis on love and tolerance and general acceptance of people, I think you can make a pretty strong case that a lot of that is rooted in sort of the, you know, Judeo-Christian worldview that, you know, from which American culture came.
Sure.
And, you know, in an effort to embrace things like, you know, love and tolerance and acceptance, often, and by no means exclusively, but often, the people who should be the most loving can turn out to be the most intolerant. It is very easy for the, you know, traditionally religious and for the traditionally non-religious to espouse certain virtues and then fall so far from those in an effort to uphold what is good and right and true in their eyes. And Reva is an extraordinary case in point.
Yeah.
Of that particular phenomenon, which I think is just so excruciatingly abundant in American culture today.
Wow, man, that's some of the deepest stuff we've ever had on the show, man. Yeah, yeah, it's one of those things where if many people,
Christians, Scott was the spark that lit the fire.
That, yeah, yeah, we're a quasi Christian culture that has some Christian values at its core, but in so many ways has distorted them to the point of them being unrecognizable. And I think this goes to, you know, I've read the Jedi Code and the Sith Code, and I said the Jedi Code at its very start is flawed. There is no emotion. Well, you know what? I think that this leads us to a healthier place, and this is certainly a discovery we see in Obi-Wan, and it redeems him. And that is love. Love redeems him. he loved Leia, and he goes back to Alderaan, rest in peace Alderaan, at the end of the show, and gives her a hug, and he leans down and he talks to her about her parents and says everything that's beautiful about her and where it came from. And you can just see he loves this girl and she loves him. And that's especially hard for the fact that her father betrayed him as his best friend. He's kind of like a son and a brother to him at different ways. Screams, "I hate you." They try to kill each other. I mean, it's a very Shakespearean kind of tragic story. Her mother is dead, who was also a close friend of Obi-Wan's, and yet he loves her, knowing, of course, that it was his love for Anakin that kind of landed them in the situation in the first place, right? You know, he didn't hold him accountable where he should have. He knew about what was happening with Padme and remained silent, thinking, you know, he'll come back around, or maybe I'll let it slide. Long story short, there's this great expanded universe story. I'm not even sure that it's canon by old canon standards, the Legends universe that I love. Nevertheless, Lucasfilm commissioned this author to write the story, and he wrote it, and it's out there on the internet. And it is, for my money, one of the finest Star Wars stories ever told, regardless of its level of canonicity. It's called Lone Wolf, and it takes place in the same time period, except for it is 1,000 times crazier than the Obi-Wan show. He's chased by Inquisitors, though, on Tatooine, trying to get young Luke to own Naboo. So similar in that regard. There's this little line in this story about how he looked down at young Luke, knowing he was going to have to give him away, knowing all the pain that his father had caused the galaxy and the potential for pain that this child had in him, the potential for evil. And he said, "I looked at this baby and I tried not to love him." And for Obi-Wan, that's where everything goes wrong. And then in the show, it's where everything goes right as he learns to love Leia. She teaches him so much along the way. And for us as Christians, if we lose sight of love, we've lost everything. No matter how terrible the world gets, no matter how much work we have to do, no matter how difficult that can be, no matter how much we suffer in the meantime, sometimes without explanation. Nevertheless, if we lose sight of love, we've lost sight of everything, right? For our final, question, our final theological theme for the evening, the subject of love, what else can we add to this tonight? I'm getting a little bit preachy and expanded universe heavy at the same time. So somebody rescue me, please. Perhaps rescue the listeners.
It's like preaching from the Apocrypha or something. From
even more obscure than the Apocrypha. That's right. It's a short story, though. I mean, you could read it in an hour. Parts of it, you would say, "What on earth is happening?" Parts, you would say, "Wow, this is fantastic."
Jaren, I think you've touched on something important there. There may be a hint of it, too, with Reva in a final conversation there in the desert with Obi-Wan. That she is mourning the loss of her companions. And in a sense, you might be able to make the argument that perhaps she loved them. And when you're heartbroken like that in such a traumatic fashion at such a young age, what she needed was the very thing that the Jedi Code was unwilling to give. And what she found in the Sith Code was the very thing that would ensure her inevitable destruction.
Mm. Yeah. Passion that leads to freedom by means of strength.
By oppression.
Vengeance.
The oppressed becomes the oppressor. To use language that's common these days, and that's goodness, that is essentially everyone's in kind of a theological view of humanity. That's every one of us. We are oppressors. We've been wronged. And that cycle continues. And it is, like you said, love, God's love, the redemption available through Jesus that enables one to step out of that cycle, or at least let it not be a downward spiral, but an upward spiral.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. Love for other people. Jesus exemplifies that. He, on a basic level, without getting into the Christology of it all, on a personal level, Jesus loved the people he was with. Other people overlooked. Jesus is willing to have conversations with people other people weren't willing to have conversations with, willing to touch people other people are unwilling to touch. Jesus treats a monster in Mark chapter 5, the demon-possessed man, he treats him like a man, treats him like a human, has a conversation with him. Jesus, every step of the way, enables people to be their best selves. And this is the point, right? John 3:16, the famous verse, right? God so loved the world. He loved the world in this way that he gave everything. And we've got to love the world. I see far too many Christians who seem to hate the world. We've got to love the people around us as we love God. They've got to coexist and go hand in hand. Scott, in the time I was at Lemonster, I hope that came through loud and clear, right? Those 2 points more than anything else is that we've got to love the Lord our God and love our neighbor as ourself. Well, I think that'll do it for tonight. Any last theological themes we haven't touched on? Any other points or spoilers we haven't spoiled?
I missed Dexter Jexter. I wanted to see Dexter Jexter. That's my big...
I'm reading a book right now that he's in, a story about young Obi-Wan. You know what? I don't think the embargo's out on this book, so I might have to edit that out. Anyway, I'll say this much. If you like Dexter Jetster, there are some great Star Wars books out there, including some released in 2022. He is having a renaissance. So that's all I'll say. Well, now that we've spoiled the show and a book that's not even out yet, that'll do it for tonight's episode of Hyperspace Theology. Guys, it has been a pleasure to be with you again.
Likewise.
Absolutely.
And that will do it for tonight. Listen, we talked about 5 key theological themes from Obi-Wan Kenobi from Disney Plus. Hey, if you have a theme that we missed or one you think that we ought to at least give a shout out to, perhaps even a whole episode, we would love to hear your feedback. You can get in touch with us by emailing us hyperspacetheology@gmail.com, or hey, we're working on some other fun social media plans behind the scenes too. Make sure to make your voice known whatever way possible. Kevin, before we shut it off tonight with Hyperspace Theology, you've got another show going on. What's going on over there with Faith in the Folds?
Yeah, Faith in the Folds. We wrapped up our New Testament series, and I've got a couple of other episodes out working on a handful. Perhaps my most controversial episode is out as of today, at the time of recording. I interview a church historian and an ethicist named Keith Stanglin out of the Center for Christian Studies based in Austin, Texas. We talk about reactions to the landmark overturning of Roe versus Wade, and we talk about historic Christian perspectives on abortion and what it means to kind of navigate those waters and things like that. So you can check us out, Facebook, YouTube, audio venues everywhere, Faith in the Folds.
Wonderful. Yeah. Trying to think of some other really controversial topics we could get into. Everybody can throw those ideas over to Kevin over at Faith in the Folds. We will be back soon with another episode before you know it. And God bless everybody, and may the Force be with you.